Hello, welcome to an episode of the Indie Founder Podcast. It's been a long time. It's been a really long time. So I don't know if I'm talking to the void or if there's actually someone listening to me right now. If there is someone, hey, how have you been? I don't know why I didn't release episodes. To be honest, I think it was mostly because I treat this podcast a little bit as a way to vent. I don't have any kind of goals towards this podcast anymore. I don't have, you know, goals of reaching a specific number of views or to monetize the podcast. It's just a way for me to kind of narrate my story and collect my thoughts and maybe share to the ones that are willing to listen a little bit of what it's, you know, really about to be an entrepreneur, specifically an indie entrepreneur, a bootstrapper. So I don't even know where I last kind of left the story of my entrepreneurial journey, but I feel that I want to, you know, tell you a little bit more about what has happened since the beginning of the year, which I reckon it's a lot of months, but a lot of things have happened. So a lot of realizations, a lot of things that I've learned, and I wanted to share this with you. So yeah, welcome. And let's get started with another episode of the Indie Founder Podcast. So it's funny how seasons work, and I never thought that a podcast or a business that serves podcasters would be so much influenced by seasons, by seasonality. But my company PodSqueeze, it's been now more than 2 years that we have been afloat, that we've been paying, you know, our salaries of people that work with us and creating value, which, you know, by just saying this is crazy. It's really an achievement, right? 2 years. It's 2 fucking years of a company that is profitable. And because of that, because of being 2 years, we already kind of notice a few patterns that are somehow connected with the seasonality. And it's been like this. So January, February, a huge spike normally. So it grows a lot. There's a lot of people coming. It's like the gym, you know, people want to start their podcast. They want to invest everything. So like January, February, March, there's always a huge spike. Then kind of in April, you start seeing some stagnation in terms of growth and eventually starts to decrease a little bit. Decrease, then it goes towards June, July, and then August is terrible. Like it's the worst month. I really, this time around, so this coming August, I already planned my vacations to be in August because I cannot stand just, you know, typing and working and just seeing like no customers coming in and everything going down. It's terrible. So after August, actually September right away starts picking up. October normally is quite good. And then mid-November starts going down a little bit. And then December, specifically the last 2 weeks of December, are terrible. Nothing happens. In November, it's good because you still have like the Black Friday and so on, so you can do some stuff there. But you can really find two specific low seasons, which are the last two weeks of December, and mostly August is terrible. Like last weeks of July are also not very good. So this is fun. It's interesting to see that like this is, there's a pattern. We've been, you know, in business for a little bit more than 2 years, and we have noticed this pattern. I don't know if it will continue. You know, maybe we don't have enough data, but it's quite interesting to see this, and it's quite interesting as well to see that there is a huge force around entrepreneurship, which is the market. No matter what you do, no matter. Sometimes you might be working really, really, really hard, but the market is brutal and the market kind of sets the path of a business. That's something that I didn't know, something that I've learned. And somehow I became a little bit more skeptic on how, you know, a business can and how much a business depends on their founders to succeed. Of course, it depends on the founders, but mostly, or there's a big chunk that goes to the market. So what do I mean with the market wedding? What is this? What is the market? So basically, it's the amount of people, right, that you can serve, amount of people that are willing to pay for your service at a specific moment. You know, that's kind of, that's the size of the market. And I always found a little bit abstract. Like, how do you know this, right? How can you measure this? For instance, for podcasting, it's in the billions. So they say that, actually, I should have these numbers by heart, but it's, let's say, $10 billion industry. And you think, okay, that's huge. You know, maybe can make some money. But if you go and really research deep into what this means, it means that most of the money that is made in podcasting is made through advertising. And even within advertising is made in the kind of top 5% of podcasts. So most of this money goes to advertisement, not to companies like PodSqueeze, not to kind of this service-based companies, not really service-based, but, you know, tooling and so on around podcasting. So how do we really measure, first of all, like, who is willing to pay for PodSqueeze? So we did this analysis not too long ago, and it turns out that from, I think there's like 5 million podcasts out there, and from these 5 million, only 500,000 are active podcasts, meaning that they release at least once a month. And from those, maybe a very small portion actually is willing to invest into their podcast. And then from those, only another small portion is willing to invest in repurposing tools and tools like PodSqueeze. And then on top of that, you still have competition, right? So you need to share your target market with, you know, your competitors. So turns out that from those 5 million podcasters out there, maybe only like 25,000 are the ones that you can serve. And from those 25,000, you need to share around. Now, I use GPT a lot for these kind of researches. And what GPT says is that a market leader is a tool, a platform that already owns 10% of the addressable market. So, yeah, I thought that it was, okay, you need to have at least to have more than 50% to be a market leader, but apparently not. So, yeah, 10% means that if we have a share of 10%, so around 2,500, you know, customers, that's already huge. Apparently, that's already market leader. We are not there yet. We are in the around 600 paying customers. So still a bit far from being market leader, but not super far, right? So in the plus side, we're doing good. In the not so good side, it might mean that the market is small, you know, and this is how you measure it. Now, this is something that I didn't know when I was starting. I don't know. I just thought, okay, let's keep, you know, pushing, let's keep investing on marketing and so on, and this will bring customers. So for the past, or since we started the company, my thought, even though we had like a bootstrapped company, which basically means that we are profitable from almost the first month, basically, and we have been investing in the company, right? So the way it works is we have, so it's myself and my co-founder, right? So we have to pay everything that is required to get the business going. This means we need to pay Google services, I don't know, translation services, whatever APIs we use, we need to pay. And then from then on, there's other expenses, like, for instance, investments. Like, so we invested on having a developer. We had a developer working half time. So 2 weeks per month, he was working for us. You know, we had a content writer. We had a virtual assistant. We invested our money in experts, you know, kind of consultants that would give us help with SEO or with sales. We invested in conferences, you know, going to conferences, which are quite expensive. You know, the ticket, the flights, the stay there. So all of that goes to the investment, and whatever is left from that goes to our salaries, right? Goes to my salary and to João's salary. So that's how we structured the company. Why were we investing? Because that's how we thought this, you know, you should do, like, when you're doing, especially in a VC company, everyone keeps saying that, yeah, for the first 3 months, or for the first, not 3 months, for the first 3 years, I didn't have a salary because I invested everything into the company. And there's, like, this romanticized version of a company that says that the founders need to, like, suffer a lot at first to eventually then, you know, hit a huge sale and become multimillionaires. So that was kind of the mindset. That's what I was thinking about. Keep in mind that I didn't think too much about the size of the market or anything. I just thought, okay, there's challenges. There's things that we need to fix, namely like our churn. We need to reduce our churn. We need to develop the product. We need to get B2B customers. So these are challenges. And if we unlock these challenges, if we fix them, then eventually, you know, the company will succeed. Now, there's one thing that is really interesting and depressing at the same time and about entrepreneurship, which is the market is brutal. The market doesn't fucking care. If you give all of your best, if you invest, like, the market doesn't fucking care. If you work for others, right? If you work for another, you know, and to another company, maybe your boss might care about this. They were like, hey, you know, Thiago worked really hard. He worked 12 hours days, you know, 16 hours days. He came on weekends. He put a lot of effort and he has learned a lot. So let's give him a promotion. That's how it works in the muggle world. That's how it works in the 9-to-5. It's not how it works as an entrepreneur. The market doesn't fucking care. The market will not give you a promotion because you worked really, really hard for, you know, for the past 2 years. No, the market is the market, and it might work, it might not work. So that's kind of the truth to it, and it can be a bit unfair because it can also mean that someone that is working half of what you are working is making a lot more money because they are just in a different market, or they kind of unlocked something that worked for them. So we reached the beginning of this year, and there's so many things, you know, to unbox here when you're building a business. But one really important thing is the relationship you have with your co-founder, if you have one, right? If you don't have a co-founder, even the relationship you have with yourself and the ones around you, like, it's very, very, you know, there's a lot of mindset and a lot of kind of self-development you need to do. So we reached the beginning of the year, and I was still, there's still some anxiety because I'm not, still not, but I was not very happy with the salary I was taking, right? So for me, I made the calculations. I wanted to get at least 2,000, 2,500, you know, after taxes. I think that would be really nice. But I was not near that. Like, it seemed that we have been working really hard, but my salary was just going down because we're just investing more and more. And that was okay because I thought that, okay, I'm investing in the company. That's okay. It will pay off in the end. But the thing is that there was not a match with my co-founder. My co-founder, João, we would come sometimes a bit frustrated and saying like, ah, man, we're working too much. What about having like a 4-day work week? And I was like, dude, what the fuck, man? Like, it makes no sense. I'm investing all of this money and making this sacrifice because I think this, you know, can work out. I think the company can grow. So we realized that there was this mismatch on how we were seeing things. So in my perspective, there was two ways to go. One is we need to raise money. I am tired of like sacrificing my salary and still not having enough to like really invest on the things I want to invest. I want to test everything really fast to see if there's actually a future to this company. So that would be one option. Let's raise, I don't need to be a big round. Let's raise whatever, 100K, 200K, so that for 1 year, we can really like invest in the company. And the other option is let's do the opposite. Let's scale down. Let's fire the people that are working with us or reduce their hours. Let's really reduce costs and treat this more as a kind of a lifestyle business. So I proposed this to him. I said, like, dude, there's these two options, either one or the other. I don't want to continue doing like going as we are now because I feel that I'm anxious. I don't get a paycheck that I want. And at the same time, we don't have enough money to invest. And I don't see you committed to like putting the hours that might be required. So we thought really hard about this, and we decided to go with the second option, scaling down. So let's not, you know, raise money. Let's scale down. Because raising money is also quite stressful, if you think about it. Like, so at the moment, right, if we sell the company, the company is 100% ours, right? So we sell, and whatever profit we get is to share between us, 50-50. The moment you get someone else in, the moment someone comes and invests whatever, you know, 100K to your company, they might want to get their money back first. This happens a lot, right? So if we eventually the company doesn't succeed as we thought it would, and then we end up selling it for, let's say, 200K, the first 100K goes to this person. So we need to share the other. So we're actually losing money. It's a bet. You know, it's a huge bet. A bet that I think I was willing to take. But he was not, João, my co-founder. So we said, okay, let's go the other way. Let's reduce costs. That's what we did. So I think we were very successful in that. That was very positive. It was not easy, but we were like, okay, instead of the developer working, 2 weeks per 2 weeks per per month, he is now working kind of half a week. Our content writer also reduced. We let go our virtual assistants. We reduced on conferences. We tried to reduce a lot, even in the business itself. Like, we had like a big freemium model with a big free tier that we reduced as well. And we said, okay, now let's do things in a different way, in a different pace, and let's see. So in the plus side is that I'm less anxious because I know we are doing everything we can to take the maximum salary, which is something that makes me happy. Because what was happening before was that I was getting too much into the business. Okay, and I need to make it work. And I felt that sometimes I wanted to escape. I wanted to relax. And for me, escaping relaxes. I'm a kind of guy that I'm not like, I don't want to spend a lot of money, but I like to, for instance, travel. I like to do some things that require money. I mean, if for me, relaxing, even going out for dinner, doing a travel, whatever, it requires, you know, money. And I always felt that I didn't have that money because I was not making enough. So it was, okay, I need to work to get the money. And if I want to relax, I need money to pay for it. So it was kind of a snowballing situation. It was a loop. So now I think at least I'm a bit more relaxed in that regard. Unfortunately, of course, this also means that we are investing. There's less hands on deck, right? Less options here. But basically that was the decision. Now, another thing that we tried and which has been really, I think it has been quite successful and also an interesting learning, has been B2B. So mostly our business was focused on kind of a B to small B, B2C. So customers that would have either a very small business or just, you know, they have a podcast, they're not really making money out of this, but they want to use a tool like PodSqueeze. So these were our main customers, and they are still our main customers. But we thought, well, maybe we can start targeting bigger companies, big media groups. And we start doing this here in Portugal. So I'm happy to say that now at least three of the big, like we have three big media groups, Portuguese media groups, they are now our customers. And I'm very happy. It doesn't pay so much yet because I think we didn't do very well. We didn't charge enough. We're a bit kind of afraid to ask for a lot of money. I don't know. But it has been a very interesting learning, like how to reach out to these people, how to convince them. And these deals, they take months, like really. We have been doing deals for 2, 3, 4 months to get one key company to close with us. Why? Well, because first you need to convince someone to try the tool. Second, if they like, you need to give them a lot of minutes so that they can try it and kind of become the champions, the PodSqueeze champion in their organization. And then they need to convince their bosses that, you know, they should pay for it. And then there's like a whole procedure needs to go to like 3, 4 different departments. And it takes a really, really long time. But it's been a really cool experience. And the fact that we're able to close these three, like at the moment, the biggest podcasting producer in Portugal is our client, or at least not even maybe like top three biggest or almost. So it's quite successful. It's quite successful. That was really quite cool as well, because it's, you know, it takes time, and now we are getting more into the industry, and it's very positive. I'm really happy with this. So that was a very interesting learning. And one other thing we did is that we hired someone to do this for us, to like reach out and schedule demos in South America, but it didn't work. At the moment, we are only able to close in Portugal. I don't know if it's probably it's because we are Portuguese and it's easier. We understand the culture, it's easier to talk. We cannot do the same for other countries. Now, of course, with a big round of investment, this is probably what we would do, like hire people to do like the whole sales process. But at the moment we are not doing because of the reasons that I I just explained. So yeah, that's been basically it. Now we are reaching a point of like the summer, which I told you about, right? Like there will be less people investing in podcasting during the summer, and I started to think, okay, what shall we do? And here again, there's a different kind of motivation between myself and my co-founder. I enjoy working, you know, that's the weird thing. I this is my calling. I love entrepreneurship. I love learning about entrepreneurship, and I urge, you know, today's Sunday and I'm excited to start the week. I know it's a cliche, but it's true. And on Fridays, I'm kind of depressed. I mean, not super depressed, but I'm like, yeah, okay. Whereas with my co-founder, it's the opposite. And he's like, he's excited for the weekend, and is not really too excited to start the week. And it's weird for me, this. Like, does this mean that he's not very passionate about podcasts anymore? Does this mean that he would rather do another thing? Or he just like has a different way of thinking than I do? And so these are things that kind of worry me as well. Like, what is the future of this in terms of a company? Because for me, I'm still passionate about podcasts. I'm passionate about like the industry, and I want to keep going for sure. I enjoy this. I don't see the same motivation from his side. So like, how do we manage things from here? Because you know we are still both in it, and either we will like maybe think about other businesses, starting something else, and if maybe even eventually selling the company. That might be an option. It's something that I'm not super excited about, because as I said, like I really enjoy still working with PodSqueeze and so on. But maybe this is what we'll need to do. And I'm excited as well to go through that. It's another part of the entrepreneurship that I've never been through, something that I want to learn about. And if we eventually do that, I will, of course, let you know how this goes. At the moment, I'm actually reading a book or listening to a book from Rob Walling. His newest book is called, I think it's like How to Exit or How to Sell a Company, something like this. So it's kind of a book for me to prepare myself and to kind of know how to do this. Because as he says in the book, he is co-writing his book with his wife. But what they both say is that selling a company is something, or selling this company is something that I can only do once, right? So I sell PodSqueeze only once, so I cannot screw it up. It's not like, you know, doing SEO where you do something, you screw up and you try again, or pricing or something. No, it's something that you can only do it once. So yeah, that's kind of where I am at the moment. And this was nice. It felt good to share a little bit about what has been going through in PodSqueeze. And I'm excited as well to see what I am going to do now next, if I'm going to just doing PodSqueeze or do other stuff. But if you have any questions, if there's something I can do to help you out, feel free to reach out either on Twitter at the WBTiago, it's my handle, LinkedIn, or email, whatever. Just shoot me a message. This was another Indie Founder episode. See you next time.